go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome aboard for this Tuesday evening edition of Head On. I am Bob Kincaid. It is a truncated edition this evening. Well, I'll be here for about an hour. I've got look, there's no getting around this. I've got a local activist meeting for the local group that is fighting the mountaintop removal going here, and we need every warm body, and you know, even mine. So I'll be disappearing about 7 p.m. Eastern time, depending on how long it takes. Maybe I'll do another hour when I get back, depending on the length of the meeting. So it's just sort of a wait and see kind of thing. But at any rate, that's the plan for this evening. And by the way, I didn't mention it last night and should have, but I got so wrapped up in what turned out to be a marvelous pair of discussions that I didn't. Just wanted to let you know that Guy James is severely bummed out that he is not on the air with us lately. There was an accident in Guy's home, and he has been tending to the well-being of his lovely wife for the last couple of weeks as she rehabs afterward. And that has prevented him from being on the air. But he will be back as soon as he humanly possibly can be. And hopes that you will indulge him in this necessary absence. Yeah, because, you see, this is radio that really does have some honest-to-Jesus family values about it. Family comes first. I mean, in part, that's why... that's why I'm not going to be doing 3 hours tonight, because you know I'm not going to this meeting of this group because it's some vanity for me. What happens here in this local community has everything in the world to do with whether or not my children and grandchildren have a future here if they choose to live here. Or if they live out their lives and want to come back here. That's the import of this fight. So, again, please understand that what we're doing here at the Horn, we are not only talking the talk, we are walking the walk. Whether it is me, whether it's Guy James, whether it's John Fox out looking for a new place to live, the real world has a way of intruding upon what we do because the real world is where we live. You know, we're not Flush Flimball pulling down $40 million a year or Howard Stern pulling down $100 million and able to pay or even, you know, some liberal talker who maybe hasn't been on the air lately pulling down $500,000 a year. We're not doing that. We're living life. Because we're damned hard-pressed to have a real conversation with you and yet somehow live in some sort of vacuum. This is real life. Real life is what you share with us, and it's what we share with you, and I think it's part of what makes these things, this effort, this endeavor, the Horn, so very, very special. That having been said, let's back up a minute. I want to pick up where Mark left off for just a minute. There's other things we have to do this evening, and I want to get it all done in this tiny little hour. But I want to play something for you. Last night, I played for you the too real to be funny dialogue from Saturday Night Live, in which Dan Aykroyd played a not nearly orange enough John Boner. He also should have cried, too. But, you know, far be it from me to criticize a pro like Dan Aykroyd or those scriptwriters. Well, Eric Cantor is the House Minority Whip. He is from the Old Dominion. He's from Virginia. Okay? It also turns out, just in case you were wondering, that he's got a pretty young wife, and she works for something called New York Private Bank and Trust. Actually, she works. Diana F. Cantor runs a Virginia-based subsidiary of New York Private Bank and Trust. They weren't in any. This bank was not in any trouble whatsoever. None. But Diana Cantor's bank that wasn't in any trouble picked up the phone and called the bean counters. And they restructured their tax setup, this bank did, so that they could have some corporate bailout welfare. Yes, yes, yes. The Virginia-based subsidiary of New York Bank and Trust, the New York Bank got a cool $267.2 million from the TARP program on January 9th. And the spokesman, has said that they were never aware that the parent bank was seeking or received bailout funding. Didn't know it. No. Virginia Private Bank and Trust is the subsidiary. Diana Cantor runs it. She is the managing director. She's also on Media General's board of directors. Eric Cantor, via his deputy chief of staff, says that the bailout money is a freak coincidence. That person is Rob Collins. He says it's not like she's lobbying for the industry or anything. And she had no idea, none whatsoever, that the banking welfare money was going to her parent company. No idea whatsoever. So back to Eric Cantor. This is, wow, what a nut job this guy is. He's really cool because he knows that rock and roll, you know? Oh, sorry, wrong accent. I'm gonna make a video and I'm gonna use some of that there rock and roll. It's a black screen with little weird phrases going across it it's about a minute. It's about 40 seconds long. Done to the tune of it's an old Aerosmith clip from the album Rocks. I think I first purchased it. 1978, maybe? And it was a couple of years old then, I think. Rocks is the album that came out before Toys in the Attic. Vintage Aerosmith. And apparently Aerosmith didn't like it, so they had the video pulled. But among other things, it repeats the same old tired lies that the right wing has been prattling on about it. Cantor can't even keep from violating copyright. Yeah. Nice. But it's what was one of them? $1 billion for Acorn. Now, everybody with a half a brain in their head knows that that is an abject lie, that there isn't a penny for, there's not a mention of so much as a penny in any of this stuff for Acorn. And it used South Carolina Governor Sanford's talking points that the government's going to buy automobiles that are little more than glorified golf carts. Whew. Stunning. But these people are actually proud of what they're doing. They are proud of their obstruction. They are proud of their efforts to follow up on the oxymoron Flush Flimball's statement. My friends, I don't need 400 words. I need four. I hope he fails. They're proud of that. Now, you want to know how nutty Flush Flimball is? You want to know how far down the OxyContin garden path Flush Flimball is? U.S. News, you know, the magazine, interviewed, of all people, Sea of Galilee mud mask hustling Pat Robertson. That Pat. And asked him this question. So you don't subscribe to Rush Limbaugh's I Hope He Fails school of thought? Answer by Robertson. Quote, that was a terrible thing to say. I mean, he's the president of all the country. If he succeeds, the country succeeds. And if he doesn't, it hurts us all. Here's the fun part. One wonders how they'll make Pat Robertson go on Flush Flimball's show like they did poor little the Rafe Gingrey, or whatever his name is, was from Georgia. Quote, anybody who would pull against our president is not exactly thinking rationally. So don't take it from me that Flush Flimball is an irrational gas bag. Take it from one of his own. Take it from Pat Robertson. Anybody who would pull against our president is not exactly thinking rationally. Which is just one of those moments that makes me think that the sun is going to rise in the west tomorrow. Pat Robertson's the sane one in the Republican Party now? Mother! Get me that Thorazine milkshake and bring two straws. That's astonishing. But that's just to let you know where we are this evening. And one other thing, and it's another one of those other things that sort of makes you feel kind of unsettled and queasy and a little bit at sea. Mark Levine and I, Guy James, John Fox, everybody on this network has screamed, the Weekenders as well, Rick Smith, Rick Goodner. Now, Billy Shears hasn't, because Billy Shears is not, you know, he's trying to help you relax a little bit on Saturday nights. But everybody has howled about the flagrant flouting of the law in which that little Pillsbury doughboy evil thing, Karl Rove, evading subpoenas and stuff, you know, begging Congress to invoke inherent contempt and put him in a little cell somewhere until he testifies. It's perfectly legal, not difficult to do. Our chat room moderator and all-around brilliant guy, Lottie, sent this along to me shortly before the show. I passed it along to Mark, but he ran out of time, so I'm going to take care of this real quick. Because it's one of those not inspiring moments. A story from over at The Raw Story, rawstory.com, under the byline of John Byrne, headline, Obama, not Bush, now seeking delay of Rove deposition. Well, damn. Former Bush Deputy White House Chief of Staff Karl Rove has a new president urging Congress not to force him to testify next week. President Barack Obama. Oh, that sucks. In a court brief quietly filed Monday, Michael Hertz, Obama's acting assistant attorney general, said it was necessary to delay an effort to force Rove to be deposed in a congressional investigation into the firing of 9 U.S. attorneys and the alleged political prosecution of a former Alabama governor, to wit, Don Siegel. Hertz said an effort was underway to find a compromise for Rove and requested 2 weeks to broker a deal before proceeding in court. Mother McCree. I thought we were done with this crap, but we're not. Quote, the inauguration of a new president has altered the dynamics of this case and created new opportunities for compromise rather than litigation. We have compromised the entire Constitution of the United States for the last 8 years, may I remind you, friends and neighbors. And that sort of compromising should be over with. Hertz wrote in the brief that was released late Monday by McClatchy's Washington, D.C. Bureau, at the same time, there is now an additional interested party, the former president, whose views should be considered. Come on, everybody. Get the little emoticons going in the headonradionetwork.com chat room. Fire it up. Kumbaya, my lord. Kumbaya. That's right. The Obama administration is behaving solicitously toward the feelings of George W. Bush. The Obama administration is acting with solicitude for a man who is personally responsible for the death of nearly a million Iraqi civilians. Personally responsible for the deaths of in excess of 4,000, near 5,000 American servicemen and women? Yeah. My stomach's not feeling real good right now. The House has the power to compel Rove's testimony. The Obama administration doesn't want it to. Mighty hard to stomach. I thought this was what we were getting rid of. I thought this was where we were trying to go away from. It apparently is not. Then again, over at CNN.com earlier today, a headline. A very disturbing headline. Obama approves more troops for Afghanistan. Obama approves more troops for Afghanistan. Now, I'm not going to sit here and scream that it's all a failure. This is one of those I'm not angry, I'm disappointed moments. I don't understand the underpinnings of this philosophical argument, this bit of sophistry that says that Iraq was wrong, but Afghanistan was right. Because it wasn't. You know, the word quagmire was applied to Iraq early and often, and rightly so. But if you want the historic definition of a quagmire, it is Afghanistan. It is what was once called in the old Persian Empire, Bactria. The Persian king of kings, whether he was Xerxes, Darius, Artaxerxes, the other Xerxes, Cyrus the Great mentioned in the Bible, none of these could reliably hold Bactria. Afghanistan, the Khyber Pass. As we've noted before on this program, neither could Alexander the Great. Neither could the Russians. Neither could the British. Neither could the Russians again. But us? Oh, we're smarter than the entirety of recorded history, and we can if we just send a few more people with targets on their backs to that benighted, dusty, mountainous region. President Barack Obama has approved a significant troop increase for Afghanistan, Pentagon officials told CNN Tuesday. The new troops deployment is expected to include 8,000 Marines headquartered from Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, as well as 4,000 additional Army troops from four... We's a surgeon, boys and girls! Surgeon! Gives me the shudders. Somewhere in Washington, D.C., in the bowels of the Pentagon, is a guy, or maybe in Tampa, Florida, or who the hell knows where, is a guy with a bunch of metal stars on shoulder boards on his little costume, and he thinks he's smarter than Alexander the Great. Really? Alexander the Great, who had at his disposal the resources of the entire known world, who marched like a knife slicing through hot butter through some of the toughest places on earth, who put forward engineering miracles to bring down Tyre, for instance, who solved the problem of the Gordian knot, who took Egypt, was proclaimed in Egypt God on earth, who marched through all of the miserable Middle East and defeated the Persian king time and again, finally, utterly, at Gaugamela, horribly outnumbered, and won, marched on through Persia, plundered the Persian Empire of every scrap of gold that it had, and then had the genius to wrap the Persian Empire into his own and gain them as soldiers on his onward march, tripling, quadrupling, or quintupling his own army, and still could not take and hold Afghanistan. Kandahar province in Afghanistan. We've heard plenty about Kandahar province. Is a localization of the word Iskander, which in turn is a localization of the word Alexander. It is all that remains of Alexander's attempt to take and hold Afghanistan. There will be no province in the future named Petraeus. There will be no future province named after any American. There will be no Bushahar. And dare I say it, there will be no Obamawar. Because the region is naturally resistant to domination, occupation, and forced change. You know, you can't help evolution along. You can't hand Homo habilis an iPod and expect him to become, you know, if you had the time machine, and expect him to overnight become Homo sapiens. Neither can you force civilization upon Afghanistan. But like LBJ before him, Obama has been convinced that just a few more bones, a little more sinew, a little more gristle, a few more weeping mothers, fathers, brothers, aunts, uncles, sons, and daughters, and wives, and husbands. And by golly, we can declare victory in Afghanistan. Here I sit, a hillbilly in a holler. There you sit in your varied locations, whether you're in Massachusetts, whether you're in North Carolina, whether you're in the Pacific Northwest or Southern California, whether you're in the desert desert west or in the high mountains of Colorado, whether you're in Central Florida, North Florida, South Florida, whether you're in Alabama, Mississippi, Tennessee, West Virginia. Here we all sit and we understand, we know on an from an a priori basis that you cannot take and hold Afghanistan, and yet this man, this incredibly brilliant man who was elected president of the United States, can't seem to figure it out. Is it the cachet of the presidency? I do not know. Is it the simple knowledge that you've got all that really nifty, neato, keen, groovy, bee's knees equipment available to you, and lots of things go boom and bang and slam, and you know, if you just use a little bit more of it and you just send a few more people with guns over there, it'll all get better? I do not know what the temptation is any more than I know why the mouse reaches for that little smear of peanut butter on the trap and winds up with his little neck broken under the flying spring-loaded piece of metal. Barack Obama just had a stunning victory in the form of the so-called stimulus package, and I fear he will squander it on Afghanistan. $12,000 worried mothers and fathers, husbands and wives. And there is nothing to indicate that that's the end of it. 12,000 sleepless nights, night after night after night. President Obama issued a written statement saying this increase is necessary to stabilize a deteriorating situation in Afghanistan, which has not received the strategic attention, direction, and resources it urgently requires. The Taliban is resurgent in Afghanistan, and Al-Qaeda supports the insurgency and threatens America from its safe haven along the Pakistani border. There is some question as to where and how the attack came that killed 26 people in Pakistan recently, although we were described as a suspect in the bombing. In 2009, the United States of America is now described as a suspect, much as would be a bank robber, a rapist, an arsonist, or a murderer. Defense Secretary Robert Gates says our mission in Afghanistan needs to be more realistic and focused. He said during a recent Senate hearing, if we set ourselves the objective of creating some sort of Central Asian Valhalla over there, we will lose because nobody in the world has that kind of time, patience, and money. There are 38,000 in Afghanistan now, and we're going to increase it by 12. That's 50,000. If we increased it tenfold, it would not be enough. Any de minimis student of ancient history would know that. But we're smarter, because we've got more things that go bang and boom. One wonders about Robert Gates' choice of words, a Central Asian Valhalla. Did he mean utopia? I hope he meant utopia, because Valhalla is a troublesome word. You know, and I know, I'm not telling you anything you don't know. You know what Valhalla was, is, might be. The mythic afterworld, the blissful home, the long home of warriors slain in combat. So while Gates says he doesn't want to create some sort of Central Asian Valhalla, what he is doing is, in fact, that. Afghanistan will become a place where American hopes and dreams go to die. And for those whose family members, whose loved ones will pay the price of our vanity, our foolhardiness, our willingness to go adventuring abroad into places in which we have no business. Oh, my heart aches. My heart aches. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob, hey.
Hey, Sandra, what's up?
Oh, man, you know what? This is just madness, this Afghanistan stuff. It really don't make no sense.
Not to any degree that I can comprehend, no.
You know, and they just killed 33 more people with their drones.
Yeah.
In Pakistan. I mean, are they trying to encircle that part of Asia in anticipation of, you know, some horror of resource wars because they won't shift over to, you know, a sustainable existence, so they're just gearing up for the inevitable? I mean, I'm just trying to figure it out because he signed.
Well, remember those pipelines from the Caspian Sea Basin do still need protecting. It was in May of 2001 when George Bush, in the process of trying to get that pipeline through, had members of the Taliban over, and they were told, upon being given a check for $43 million, they were told, "We will give you a carpet of gold or a carpet of bombs. You choose." And that pipeline that goes from the Caspian Sea Basin through Afghanistan, through Pakistan, to the Indian Ocean is still there. It's worth remembering that Hamid Karzai, before becoming corrupt president of Afghanistan, was the, he was a deal maker, a fixer for UNICAL in the region.
Well, yeah, and he's fallen out of favor. I mean, that's the impression I get from what I've been reading. He's not really in sync with this administration. So it seems like they're anticipating his demise or his removal or however they shift these people. I just don't anticipate him being around too much longer. Perhaps I'm wrong.
Frankly, I can only imagine that this escalation is seen as a means of trying to prevent some sort of pending Dien Bien Phu there. I mean, look, you've got the deal that was announced, what, yesterday, the day before, depending on how the globe turns, between Pakistan and the Taliban allowing Sharia law to be
the
SWAT area, right.
Yeah, I heard about it. Yeah, I saw that too. I was just like, oh, well, I think that was something that the U.S.
Sandra, isn't that a cession of sovereignty by the Pakistani government?
Oh, well, no. Hey, but I thought, well, I guess they didn't pay attention to the dictate from Washington. But see, Washington is right not dealing with the instability that SWAT region is causing, you know, a fairly fragile Pakistani government, which is conventional wisdom, if you have any sense. I'm not too sure why Obama. I mean, is this just to placate the armament people? Because
if it was that, it would have to be a lot more than 12,000, wouldn't it?
Well, didn't he want 30? I mean, isn't this what Johnson? You know, isn't this how we get into these sort of
right? The first analogy that came to mind for me, Sandra, was in fact LBJ.
Yeah, right. I'm just saying. It's just kind of like, you know, you can't do Great Society 2 and have the war, you know, at the same time. Didn't we already go there? Lessons learned and all that?
How are you going to stimulate an economy that's been crushed by illegal wars in the first place if you're persisting in them? That's just the question I have to ask.
Well, not only that, but I mean, you know, are you looking at stuff, what's going on outside of this country too? That Japanese situation, I guess I know why homeboy got drunk. That shit over there is bad.
Yes, it is. And in fact, our buddy Robert from Kita Kyushu was in the chat room last night talking about some of it. And it is. It's, you know, America has sneezed and the world has the flu.
Well, yeah, but did you see Homeboy the drunk?
Oh yeah, yeah, oh yeah, and I agree with Rachel Maddow. I don't know about cough medicine, but I sure know hammered.
Yeah, well, but the thing is though, the situation calls for a sake or seven.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. Pour it and keep it coming. You know.
Yeah, because their that reduction in GDP was kind of crazy, and they're export dependent, and nobody's buying shit, so they're in deep doo doo too.
And not looking at the way up. I mean, there's nothing that says anything's getting better.
Well, and we're like the, national news, Jokesville, 20,000 that this bitch is laying off because they can't get one fucking Republican to vote. Forgive the language, but I'm just
exasperated
with what's going on over here because they're going to lay off 20,000 public sector workers, stop all construction projects.
I read this in the New York Times today, Sandra, and this is breathtaking, the scope of what's going on in California.
Yeah, they're going to...
Because not one stinking good-for-nothing Republican in the California State Senate could be found to do the right thing.
Well, they found a couple, but they need one more.
Right, yeah.
But the majority of them are hanging tight on this issue of tax increases, which, begs... it doesn't make any sense because if you leave the situation as is, the downside is far greater than the regressive taxes and cut combination they have to sort of bridge the gap. And at this point, even the boobin grabber is trying to get some of his own party.
Well, and that was my next question. Now, Gray Davis, wasn't it, got his head put on a pike for a lot less than this.
Oh, no. His shit was nothing compared to this.
Where are the recall Arnold petitions?
Well, yeah, exactly. No, the thing is that it's just so much more serious now, and it to be held hostage by the minority party on some ideological I don't know what, Bob, but I've never seen anything like it, and this is you'd rather throw out thousands and thousands of people out of work who will not be able to put money back into the economy to save some money and do what? I mean, I don't understand what the end game is,
The end game is collapse.
Well, no, but see, but it doesn't help these constituents who they so-called representing. It's just bizarre.
No. Well, no, it doesn't help the constituents, Sandra. And forgive me, I'm not lecturing or anything. But that has never been an interest of the Republican Party.
Well, obviously, yeah. I would think that maintaining their office would be. And if they think that the public is going to look and say, oh, this was Arnold's fault or this was Peretta's fault or some other Democrat's fault, they're tripping. I think people are well aware of what's holding it up, you see. Now, you get some people who want California to go bankrupt for the sole purpose of getting at the pension fund. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
That's something that's going on that you should keep your eye on. Same thing with the Social Security euphemism they're using for entitlement reform. That's going down in Washington. They're trying to get at it now, too, nationally. And statewide. I mean, all of it is so sick because it's like the shock doctrine, crisis, and then we go in and make things a lot worse.
Yes.
Right.
And then we declare that government can't, that government fails.
Right. And for what end, though, Bob? You're a bit more, philosophical than I am, and I'm just sort of like, I'm at a loss.
Well, to what end, Sandra? If that's a non-rhetorical question, I'll posit an answer.
Yeah, no, it is this question. It's not. I'm not being cute or nothing. I'm serious because I am sort of confused because you can't govern a pile of shit.
The Republican Party is facing its doom. It is, and it realizes that it cannot go along and actually try to fix the country along in the terms that have been laid out by the Obama administration domestically, at least. Because that'll be the end of them. Because if it works, then we look up and Reagan gets thrown on the ash heap of history. Both Bushes get thrown on the ash heap of history. Everybody who followed their sick and twisted policies, ash heap of history. Their only hope, and this is a hope that this is one of those generational things, Sandra. Their only hope, and it is their greatest hope, is to drive the American economy into the dirt, utterly destroy it, and then remake it as if the New Deal never, ever happened.
Right, okay.
And you wind up with this libertarian-esque, what was the phrase the other night? Anarcho-Randian wonderland.
No, yeah, where this sort of Darwinism where if you don't adapt, you die, right?
There you go.
And the thing, you know, but it's just absurd because as tough as it is in America, you think these pampered ass people they're gonna flip out first? I swear to God, or as I say these days, I swear to Bob.
Yep.
But it's just kind of like so wrong on so many levels. I even had an argument with some classmates saying, well, if this stimulus goes through and it works, you know, people will start to think that the government can actually help. That actually comes out of their mouths.
Oh, God.
We can't have people thinking that there's other alternatives besides, you know, basically, I guess, living in fear we do now. I mean, I really do think this, and I was kind of shocked, but that is actually a philosophy out there.
Yes, it is.
And I'm just, you know, I have to say, I was appalled. I'm like, what?
I know, but when, you know, it's going to take some time to sort of transition away from 8 years of George Bush saying all we have is fear. I mean, it's from before 9/11, it's been fear mongering. If you recall, it was fear mongering over North Korean bottle rockets before 9/11 happened.
No, but listen, what's so funny now though is that national intelligence guy coming on saying that, oh, the world economic situation is replacing. It's like, hello, we got a new boogeyman, the economic world crisis. Have you heard this one?
No.
This dude's saying, no, terrorism isn't our worry now. Instability can come if we don't sort out this, economic crisis. So I'm sitting there thinking, oh, okay, wait a minute. The war on terror is over now. Now it's the war on the foreclosing house. I mean, what's happening?
It's institutional ADD. Look, a squirrel.
No, but you understand what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
It's just really creepy. The only thing that's intact is this horrible security state. So they're going to point it to whatever direction they need to.
Right, and consider that we are dealing with burglars and thieves and cut purses in the Republican Party. And that going back to that endgame thing, Sandra, if they can get after those so-called entitlements, which I just despise that word because it's always freighted with so much pejorative nonsense.
Oh, yeah.
But if they can get that money, remember, that's what happened with the beginning of the Reagan era. That's where the phony economic prosperity of the Reagan era came from, was the raid on America's savings and pensions and hustling it into the markets.
And doubling the payroll tax. Don't forget that aggression.
No, no.
You call it aggression because it's like, dude, you doubled my fucking taxes to fund your tax cuts for the rich.
Well, and you know, the market is headed, you know, it's back down there where it probably belongs, maybe even lower, if it was some sort of sustainable, sane growth.
Oh, no, it should be probably around 5. I'll be honest with you. I think that is, I'm not saying that reflects this disaster,
but if you can steal all the money and give that to your Wall Street buddies. Oh, we're back at phony baloney 12 again.
Well, no, Obama, though, it's like Axelrod, if you want to believe these reports, there were people in his administration saying, dude, you can't reinflate this shit, basically, which is what they're trying to, the bankers want them to do, is to reinflate it all over again.
Right, and there are people who want to blow on that balloon no matter how many holes are already in it.
No, but they're doing it. Unless... The only saving grace is if this stress test is what they say it is. If they stress test this bitch and it don't work, then it has to be nationalized. You see what I mean?
Yes.
But I'm not too sure if I'm buying it, because his weak-ass crackling voice, that Geithner, or whatever, that guy?
Not exactly an inspirer of confidence.
No, not.
That's a guy coming on before the microphone who's the captain of the Titanic saying that, you know, everything's under control.
Yeah, no. At any rate, the back to what you were talking about, the Afghanistan thing, it is a bit of a worry because I hate to keep using this word, but I'm really stuck on the end game now because, to be honest, I'm sick of this shit. I'm like, come on, yo. Wrap something up. Iraq, Afghanistan, something, shit. You know what I mean?
Well, and that's the thing. You know, you can almost say that there is some visible end in Iraq.
Yeah, wrap it up. You know, that would be like, if you want to distract, just say, listen.
But how do you, I mean, history, again, you know, I'm such a geek, Sandra. I am. It's pathetic. There was never a wrap up for Alexander in Afghanistan.
Well, no, he can't. That's.
There's no sign, you know, you are here, completion there. It's not there in Afghanistan.
Yeah, no. The whole exercise just seems so against what I see as him being a pragmatist. I don't see any pragmatism in these wars that we have going, except if it's laying the groundwork for some permanent struggle. But they got to switch now to the economic crisis because there is no war on terror, right? You have to remember that.
Yes.
They got to switch over, but. Listen, I mean, the stories just don't stop. The hits keep on coming. And I have to touch on these poor kids who were locked up to enrich these
dirty judges.
And judges. Hello.
Yeah.
That's sick.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, it is. And frankly, I can't think of rotten enough things to do to those judges, frankly.
No, but the thing is.
And the guy's on the private end of the stick.
No, that's,
you know, that's bag fox thrown in the Tiber, you know, Roman justice kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah, and not only that, this is the whole problem with privatized justice, because they have a bottom line, they need bodies. So, you think that this juvenile incident is the only one going like that?
Oh, hell no.
Fuck, man. That's the thing.
That's why I just briefly touched on that private prison story in talking about the Fourth Circuit thing in Richmond that happened to West Virginia last Friday.
Mm.
You know, I want to peep inside that judge's blind trust portfolio and see how many coal companies I can find.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You know, I'm about done with this sort of, you know, impartiality in the face of the privatization. It's just a corrupting influence, and punishment should not be determined by private entities. You see what I mean? If you're going to punish somebody based on laws that society agreed upon, you don't turn it over to private corporations, right? This is the example of why, you know, you don't do that. Now, I'm not saying that the state operates all wonderfully, but you know what I'm saying? That the
yes, I do.
Is reduced. So I think about those poor kids who are all, of course, have no access, so they're easy prey.
Right, and of course, even now that this thing has broken, I'm sure that somewhere out there is a right-wing corporatist screaming that they'll be abusing, it's lawsuit abuse, if those children, and they are children, Sandra, sue and are made millionaires out of their false imprisonment.
Oh, no, they need punitive damages. This is how you, the only way.
Put them out of business.
Of punishing these fools is put them out of business. I looked up this corporation. They got this shit all over the country. This child care, whatever. You know what
yes,
I mean?
They
I
do.
Their names.
You do the same thing I do.
Oh, no, I'm straight off looking at the parent company. I don't give a F. I'm like, and cut. Okay.
Hey, Sandra, I'm short timing tonight because I'm on the way out, but this has been a wonderful conversation.
Okay, yeah, I'll talk to you soon. And one last thing. Listen, so what's happening in progressive radio? It's nonstop, isn't it?
You know, if right-wing radio had worked like this, Rush Limbaugh never would have gotten anywhere.
Exactly, but boy, bridges are being burnt all around. Okay, listen, have a good evening.
All right, take care, Sandra. Bye. Bye. Let's see, let's keep things rolling. Hey, welcome to the program. Yo, hello.
Hello?
Hey.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah.
It's Renee Louise.
Hey, Renee Louise.
So, do we want to, are we on?
Yeah, we're on. You got a couple of minutes. Lay it out there.
Okay. So, I'm sorry. I have things going. I'm just calling to follow up on our conversation last night and regarding the DEP meeting and everything that's going on there. And as I said to you, I want to reach out to my rest of my Horn family members out there and ask that we get behind you on this and lend our voices to help empower you, because you and everyone at Cold River Mountain and whatnot who's involved in it already, you need every single piece, every single voice behind you, all the power you can get to empower you against who you're going up against. And yes, the NRDC, as we said there, and I said to you, I think we should focus on the NRDC and Robert F. Kennedy Jr., because they've been involved in it, and he's passionate about these things as well. And you need somebody who has the public exposure already to get in this now. The immediacy is so important to get involved in this now. Plus, you're going off to do that march, I think you said, and I think you're going in front of Congress, correct?
Not in front of Congress. I'm just going to visit some congressmen.
To visit some people. All right. Well, the more power you have behind us, the more voices you behind you, the more voices you have behind you, is the more power you're going to have. And when they see numbers, when they see the people start to unite, they start paying attention. And we have to start realizing our power and standing up to it. As I said to you, I am going to be screaming about this, and I implore every single one of my Horn family members, and we are a family out there. We have our Appalachian Mountains. We have all over the country. Plus, we have our Appalachian brothers and sisters being slowly slaughtered. Every moment we don't stand up and do something to try and stop this is a stain against all of us. It's a statement about who we are. What matters is how hard we try and that we confront this and that we do all that we can. And so what I was thinking we could do is go ahead and right now, each one of us, we're sitting, whoever's listening live right this moment, can at this instant send off an email to you and say, Bob, I'm with you. Bob, I stand with you. Then we take each one of those email addresses, we go ahead, you work up a statement for us, a little couple of paragraphs like they do at the NRDC, where we can each then sign on to this petition and say, we are in support of you and we are demanding that something, that this be stopped now. And so that's basically what I'm putting out there to the rest of my family, my Horn family members, is Bob needs us. You know, our Appalachian brothers and sisters need us. And we can't just sit by and listen any longer. We've got to take every single opportunity to save the soul of our country, to save each other, or we're going to have nothing. And I don't know how simpler, how much easier I can express it. You know, it's going to take 2 seconds. Those emails should start rolling into you right now. Bob, I'm with you. That's all it takes. We'll put together a list, and we'll send it out to each and every one of you to sign on. You just have to click and sign on to it. And this way we can go ahead and empower you, give you more power, more voices to confront who you're up against. We can go ahead and send it off to the NRDC as well as Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and urge them to get involved in this. The immediacy of them being involved in it now. Because after the response that you got at the DEP meeting the other night, there's no waiting. It's urgent.
Oh, it is, Renee Louise. It is past
urgent. It's so
urgent,
and I just cannot. I please, my Horn family members, please don't let me down on this. Bob needs us. People need us. We've got to come together. Our problem is that we keep dropping stitches here. You know, we have this wonderful web out there. We have the framework in place, but we have to knit the stitches together tightly. And that starts with each and every one of us. And I don't think it's a lot for us to go ahead and type you a quick email right now saying, Bob, I'm with you, so that we can get our list together and you can send out the petition to us and off we go.
Well, if folks do that, I will do that. Okay. The email ad is easy. BobKincaid@gmail.com. Let me know. Write in, share your thoughts, whatever. And I will in turn notify you when we put up some sort of statement of support.
Great.
Okie doke.
All they have to really say to you, it doesn't have to be a lie. I know everybody's under a time crunch. But if you just say, Bob, I'm with you, then we have your email address. And we can make up the list, and this way we'll have the list to know who to send the petition to. And then all you'll have to do is click on it, like all those other petitions that they send out there to get people to sign on to things. You just click on it, send it back to us, and that's it. Your part's done for now, right? Your part's done.
My part is net. Well, yeah.
Not your
part. Yeah, their part. You're right.
Doing so much. And that's what really concerns me so much as well, is that you should not be doing this alone. All right? You right now are dealing with it. It's more immediate for you right now. But this affects all of us. It affects all of us in a very material way just by, it's going to eventually hit our water, our land as well. But it also affects us just within our soul, in our being, for us to know that this is going on. And to not do something about it, to not take that moment to say, I'm here with you, I stand with you. What is life about? What is the ultimate value of, I've had said this before to you, what is the ultimate value of a life or of all life if we don't stand together?
I get it.
Like this.
I get it.
I know you do, and I'm going on because I just am.
Well, Renee Louise, I'm running short on time because I have to be at this meeting. I'm going to try to get one more phone call in, and we will it is.
It's in the hands of our Horn family there.
And there it is.
I really hope that we all stand up with you. I truly hope so.
Thank you, Renee Louise.
All right. Well, thank you for letting me have my peace.
Oh, absolutely. That's what it's all about. We'll talk soon.
Take care.
Bye now. So drop me a line, BobKincaid@gmail.com. We'll craft some sort of a statement. We'll send you a link to where the statement is, and you can get behind it. You can get behind this movement. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
Hey, Luke. What's up?
Well, I was wondering why no one this weekend. I kept on seeing Grandpa McCain out there being interviewed.
I saw him get booed at the NBA All-Star game.
Well, I was just curious, though, why no one that bothered to ask. You know, Senator McCain in 2002, when you all wrote up the Patriot Act, all the Democrats were locked out of the room. Now that you're complaining about it, where were your complaints in 2002?
Here. I seem to remember microphones being turned off at one point by James Sensenbrenner, a Republican. Is that just me hallucinating, Luke?
Oh, no, that's it. That was at a meeting, some meeting. And somebody came up to make their speech, and as soon as they did, he turned off their mics.
Yeah, I remember hearings held in broom closets.
Oh, that was when they were having some of the stuff about the 9/11 thing, I think, and they had to have it down in the basement.
Good. I'm glad it's not just me.
Oh, no. Well, the thing I was reading today was I was looking over at Crooks and Liars, and John Amato was writing this thing on talking about Rick Sanchez getting in the face of Marsha Blackburn. But he had this thing down here, and it's sort of the piece of the Wayback Machine. Said, let's go back a bit and examine what Bill Clinton left for the incoming Bush administration. A $230 billion surplus with projected elimination of the national debt by 2012.
Well, I remember those days.
You know, and it's one of those things, and amazingly enough, before we even heard the words 9/11, we heard the words tax cuts.
Oh, we heard tax cuts before the election.
Oh, and the thing... The thing I want to remind people of is just remember now, we've had 8 years of them, so we must have trillions of dollars put away because we've had 8 years of tax cuts.
Right, because tax cuts actually, if you listen to these freaks, tax cuts make government revenues go up.
Yeah. You know, I keep on hearing they want to say FDR's New Deal is dead. No, the last 8 years prove Reaganomics is dead. As they used to call it trickle down, or as we used to say, dog raises leg.
Yeah, as George H.W. Bush used to say, voodoo economics.
Oh, yes. But you know what I mean? It's just interesting. I saw that a couple of new Republicans, or new Democrats, are already eyeing Mr. Vojnovich's seat.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping here that Obama doesn't pick Bredesen for HHS so we can...
Oh, I'm going to get real upset if that happens.
Well, I'm hoping in a couple of years that Mr. Bredesen thinks about becoming a senator because he can't run for governor again.
No, but he could sure run against Bob Corker or maybe Senator Plaid. So, yeah, because it's about time for Senator Plaid's shirt to go along, isn't it?
You know, it's like I say, every time he joins something, he wants to get rid of it, so I'm ready to get rid of him.
Hey, Luke, I got to run.
I see it's top of the hour, and I know you
got
to go.
I got to.
I'll talk at you later.
All right. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye. So here's the plan. If all goes well, I'll be back in an hour, and we'll finish off the last hour of the program. If not, I'll catch you tomorrow evening. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to start last night's rerun again, or last night's show again is what I'm going to do. There will be a couple of minutes of silence, a couple of seconds of silence, then we'll do that. Because I was pretty pleased with last night's program, and I think it bears another listen. And Lord willing, I'll be back in about an hour, okay? And I'll let you know what happened in the meeting. Is that fair? So I'll see you all soon. Sorry for the truncated version, but... things must be done when you live in the real world. So hopefully I'll be back. Thanks, everybody.